This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
As we go along, let us study the male anatomy. Most men know less about their own bodies than they do about their automobiles.
The following feature has been rated R.
Don't panic.
This program contains coarse language.
It is recommended for people aged 15 years and over.
Are you ready? Sit back, turn up the volume, and enjoy our show.
Welcome. Get ready for the ride.
Hide and seek. Hide and seek.
Let's get back to the program.
Good evening and welcome to the show that explores sex, sexuality and self. My name is Dean Beck. With me, the very gorgeous Benny B.
Howdy.
How are you?
Good. It's hot in the studio tonight.
It is.
Is it just because of us or all those sports people? There's people running around the Joy Studio in all this active wear. It's
I know.
Summer. What's
it's
going on?
Sporty Spice on steroids. Not on steroids. That would be...
That would be bad.
That would be bad.
We don't condone that.
Tonight on Hide and Seek, we're going to ask a few questions. We're going to actually talk to an expert in asking questions. Tough questions. Perhaps you could SMS us or text us with the questions that you find the hardest to ask, because this is an expert in asking tough questions.
That's a good one, yep.
In fact, he gets out in the middle of the street with a TV camera and asks random strangers some pretty personal things. You'll know his work. He has been the genius behind things like Hungry Beast, the ABC's You Can't Ask That, and a new documentary series called Hello Stranger. And his name is Kirk Docker. He'll join us a little later.
Very interested.
Mm.
How does he get away with it?
How does he get away with it? How does he ask those bloody tough questions? You are listening to the show where we explore sex, sexuality and self, and we'll be asking some tough questions.
We will.
Very shortly.
Just shake that ass.
Joy.
Get on it. Just say what your mama gave you. Get on it.
Hide. Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Tonight we're asking, how do you ask those tough questions? Now, Ben, the way we interpret questions is different for every person. This is a little example from Hello Stranger. It introduces our guest to come.
Okay.
But it gives you an idea of how people respond to a very simple question. This one is, where do you feel most at home? And how they interpret that. Let's have a listen.
What we're doing is we're travelling around the country, stopping in different spots, interviewing people we meet in the street.
And I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions. Same question I ask everyone. And just
wherever pops into your head.
That's pretty risky.
We good? All right. So my question is, where do you feel most at home?
What a lovely question. I have probably half a dozen homes.
The first time I went to Thailand, I thought I feel quite at home here.
My home is out at Kunyangara Ski Beach. Sydney City's my home.
Nullumboy.
Kempsey.
Bondi Beach.
Cairns.
Alice Springs.
New Zealand.
Amsterdam.
At my nana's house.
The kitchen.
On the couch, mate.
At the beach.
In my shop.
In the gym.
Well, my daughter's got her own unit, I've got my own unit, but I feel more at home at her place. At my daughter's place, yeah.
So there you go.
Yes.
Very different answers to a very simple question. The simple man behind that question is Kirk Docker. He joins us on Hide and Seek. Kirk, welcome.
Good evening. Welcome. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Kirk, you are the creative genius behind putting Vox Pops back onto our television screens. You did it with Hungry Beast. You did it with You Can't Ask That. And this latest series, Hello Stranger, takes that a little step further. Can you explain what goes on there?
I love talking to normal Aussies, people on the street, people that walk past you. You often wonder, someone who's walking past you in the street, what's going on in their life? You know, you see someone interesting, you go, well, what's their story? So when we did it on Hungry Beast, we did a simple thing. We went out into the street and we asked these people that walk past us the same question. What do you fear? What do you think about sex? What's your favourite part of the opposite sex? Whatever it is that we wanted to just probe, universal questions. And when we were out and about, we often met these fantastic people and thought, God, wouldn't you love to delve into their life a bit more? So this new show, or Hello Stranger, sort of does that. We travel around the country, we ask universal questions of people we meet in the street, and then when we find someone who we think is interesting, we follow them home to find out what the hell's going on. That's the basic idea of the show.
It's a pretty tough gig to go up to someone that you've never met and ask something that is pretty darn personal.
Mm. Well, I suppose I have to let on a secret. I have an amazing team I work with, like everyone, I suppose, would say when they work with good people. But we have a simple team. So there's a guy who directs it and shoots it, myself. We've worked together since Hungry Beast. And then we have a third person who is a genius at approaching people. She's right. Welcoming, easygoing, very chatty. So she'll find people that walk past, often will point someone out, go, oh, I like the look of that. But I'm interviewing. So the way we streamline the process of shooting is on a day, we might spend 15 or 20 minutes with one person that we meet. So to try and get through as many people as we can, I have this amazing person who lines up people for me. So she's a genius, actually, about walking up to people. I don't exactly know her secret, but my job then is to meet this person, have never spoken to them, have never met them. I shake their hand, I build as much rapport as I can, as quickly as I can, and then I get straight into it and ask them questions. And from there, it's about really listening and trying to put yourself in their shoes as quickly as you can to try and understand, be curious, and that's sort of how it works.
I was just going to ask her, you sort of covered that, what was the best way to ask a tough question? So you don't have too much time with these people before you get right. Is it like ripping off a Band-Aid? Just one quick motion?
It's an interesting one, the tough question, because it depends on the circumstance of the interview. Mm-hmm. So if I've just met someone in the street, there's two ways you can go. You can shock them with a question straight up, and that gets their attention. If you've done a good job at building rapport quickly, you can shock them. But I tend to sort of ease into it. I'll ask something which gets them talking. It's an easy question to answer. And then I'll ask something that is a bit harder, a bit heavier, mm-hmm. All the while being very open myself, being willing to offer my own experience to sort of go, hey, this is a sharing thing here. I'll give you a bit about myself and show you sort of where I want you to go. And then I'll ask the tough question third. And then I'll make sure I finish on something that brings them out of that if it's been a heavier question. And so they walk away feeling like they haven't been sort of ripped apart and just left on the street. But if it's someone I've lined up, the work is all in the preparation. So when they come, they're generally prepared that you're going to ask the tough question. If you've done a good job, you just got to have the balls and ask.
I've used you as an example in many, many of my radio training courses where I do interview technique, and I talk about Vox Pops and the power of Vox Pops. And the power of them is in their simplicity, in making it not a complicated question, but a simple, open-ended question. And it's so illustrated by the responses that you get from random people on the street.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one, because when we were first designing it for Hungry Beast, originally we were like, okay, well, let's go out and ask all these questions, you know, 10 questions of someone. And we realised it was just way too many. Mm. The simplicity of having one question, and that's what, it's almost a conversation starter. And of course, I ask other questions off the back of that. So the first the question might be, what do you fear? Well, I'll let them answer that. But if I hear something that's worth following, if I hear a little hook, I'll follow that down. And so I'll ask follow-up questions, but essentially it's all under the same bracket of this conversation around what do they fear. And I find that the simplicity of that means that you can dig and you can go in all sorts of directions and get all sorts of responses, but you've got this common starting point.
On another edition of Hello Stranger, you asked the question, what age did you lose your innocence? Let's just take a listen to some of those responses. What age did you lose your innocence?
Oh, my goodness. What a question to ask an old lady.
Lost my innocence? My God.
I mean, how personal do you want to get?
When did I lose my innocence?
I still don't think that I have yet. I think getting old was mandatory and growing up was a choice.
I met a guy and fell in love, I guess.
Well, I was only 14 when I went out with my husband, who was 21.
Whoa.
So that was considered as being pretty terrible.
We had a bit of a relationship going, and then my dad found out about it and broke it off.
And then when I got married at 18 and he was 25, that was scandalous then too.
And when I was taken away from my mum and dad for no reason. I was stolen generation, I was just taken away from my mum and dad.
I was owned by the government because my mum didn't want anything to do with me at all. So they owned me until I was 18, and then you leave and go out on your own.
No mother, no father, no brothers or sisters, just all strangers around me.
Probably when I was around 8. Yeah, like my mum and her boyfriend at the time were always constantly fighting, so like I'd get shipped in between houses.
I grew up in a dysfunctional family background. So I had to grow up real fast.
I ended up started drinking and doing drugs that I'd find, and then yeah, until like 2 years ago, I was homeless, living in like around the Ipswich Mall.
So I left home when I was 14, you know. So and I really didn't spend much time at home from when I was 8. Really, I just, you know, go back there to sleep and eat.
The only reason I got out of it was because my friend Melissa actually took me back to her place and I stayed there for 3 months. We saved enough money for bond and got a unit of our own and have held it for 2 years now successfully, so.
I'll make sure my kids never end up in foster care or DHS or anything like that. Even if I'm sick, I'll still look after my kids.
Good.
When I call the cops on my dad? I guess.
12. I can honestly say when I was 12, I had a what I would call a horrific upbringing.
I had my brother to look after, so it was a necessary thing, and I had my mum to look after. I guess that's a bit of losing innocence there.
When I was 12, yeah, I hurt real bad.
The day I read a book about serial killers and realised they are quite capable of taking their family for a nice picnic in the park. What? They are?
I was a man took my virginity again and again and again and again. And it was a friend of my mother's, so it was even harder that I couldn't scream because the person I would have had to scream to was the person who was his lover and my mother. So it gave me no opening. So I lived with that for, yeah.
That is from Hello Stranger. The question was, what age did you lose your innocence? The man who asked that question is Kirk Docker. Kirk, you must be challenged by some of those answers.
Yeah. It's surprising what people will tell you in the street, and you are prepared for anything, really. You're happy to, personally anyway, as soon as someone starts speaking, for me, I'm generally in a place of just of empathy. I want to understand. And what's nice about this sort of thing is that some of those people don't get to talk about these things. So here's some random person who comes along and is interested, is sincere, is respectful, and they have a chance to talk. Not only that, but their story gets to be heard by a wider audience. And if they feel comfortable to do that, they feel comfortable their story is going to possibly have some greater impact. So I think that it's challenging, but it's sort of awesome as well at the same time. So, you know, I've done thousands of these. There's not much I haven't heard, really, at this point in time. So each person you take as they come and be there for them, I suppose, and facilitate them through that moment and hopefully help them sort of come to a newer learning about something, if possible.
So in your experience, Kirk, do you find that people really want to share things and they just sort of need that platform?
Yes. It's pretty rare.
That's pretty overwhelming, sounds like.
It's pretty rare that someone won't go there if you're... Look, some people aren't as good at talkers as others.
Yep.
That's just the way things are. Or some people don't... You might get the greatest person in the world, but that question just doesn't resonate with them. So sometimes it's like that. But as a general rule, if you're interested and you ask respectfully, people will answer it. And look, there's a lot of tricks in our unity to get people to talk. So, you know, and it's practice.
But if I'd
done this when I'd come out of uni, I don't know if I'd be able to get the same stuff, but it just takes practice and it just takes you being a human and all those sorts of things. And people will talk.
The thing that I find so profound in the way you do it is that you're never judgmental, regardless of the answer.
No. No, not at all. Like, for me, I just want to understand. At the end of the day, you're like, why is this person thinking this way? Why do they do what they do? Why are they into what they into? I just generally just want to understand it so I can sort of understand the world a bit better. So there's no point judging it. It's more interesting to want to understand someone who may get judged or who may have an opinion that's fucked up. It's interesting trying to understand, oh, why do you have that opinion? What, you know, what's happened in your life that you think this way? Mm. For me, I find that more interesting than judging.
We're speaking with Kirk Docker. He is the man behind many things like You Can't Ask That. Hello, stranger. We're asking tough questions on Hide and Seek tonight, and we'll ask a few more.
That's right, this is Hide and Seek here on Joy 94.9. Benny B here, Dean Beck is with me in the studio, and we are talking tough questions with Kirk Docker.
Now, Kirk, you cut your teeth on a little, well, not so little, actually a huge online documentary series called Viva Cool City, where you did some...
Yes, that's how we met.
That's how you and I met, yes. Let's not go too much into that.
In a porn factory, don't I remember?
We did, actually, amongst other things. I think I got you into a sling at one point in time, didn't I?
Yeah.
The first time you said that to someone.
I learnt what Crisco was.
Thank you very much. However, that was a pretty tough series. You did people injecting heroin. You did people who were into... animals, you did all sorts of really out there things that were pretty cutting edge, actually.
I was in my, what was I, in my mid-20s, needed to know the answers of the world, and we just thought, why don't we film it? Our background was making content, and I think when you're originally beginning learning about making content, you're thinking you want to make feature films, you want to make scripted stuff. Documentary is never something that I was drawn towards until, I suppose, my 20s, and I started having all these questions about the world I couldn't find answers to. So we just decided to film it. And it was, you know, it was right in that era when YouTube was starting. Vice hadn't made video yet. They were still making the magazine, so that was the source of inspiration. And there was a number of publications. There was an old magazine called Big Brother. We were doing these really kick-ass articles. But they weren't filming it, and a lot of it felt like it lent itself to being video. So we started filming this stuff, and as we had to keep coming up with more content, we sort of cast the net further and further about what things we needed the answer to. So it really just became about what do we want to know, and let's see if we can find someone who can tell us what that thing is.
And if you look at Vice today, it's actually very, very close to what you were doing with Viva Cool City.
Yeah, well, those guys make fantastic content, heaps of content. I suppose the difference I feel like between what they do and what we did back then anyway, I'm not quite sure how they are these placed these days, was that the Vice style, and this was why what made them very funny, is they cast this judgment over it. You know, had this do's and don'ts page. They would have a very strong opinion about what they thought. Whereas we went about it in a slightly different way. We sort of were more of the opinion of, I want to know what the hell that thing is, and let's just ask a question without the judgment. So I felt like it was slightly different.
More than just,
but yeah, definitely.
More than just ask the
material.
Ask the question. You actually put yourself right in the middle of it.
Yeah, we did a great story on Golden Showers where my partner in crime, rather than just ask about Golden Showers, which he did, he then put himself in a position where he got to be pissed on and feel it for himself and give his own judgment. So we like to include ourselves from time to time if we felt it helped tell the story. We felt that it helped the audience understand it better by putting a layman in and experiencing it. When you hear it from somebody who does it all the time, that's one thing. But if you get it from a person who's experiencing it for the first time and gives a review of it, that's something else.
And has anything been off limits?
Well,
have you gone, oh, I'm a little bit interested, oh, no. We can't do that.
We never
that.
Got to cannibalise either. We never got to eat human flesh.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty...
We thought that would be fun.
Yep.
And interesting. Let's say interesting. There were certain things. You know, at one point we were talking about getting buried alive. You know, we started getting weirder as we got further into it. There's a guy, you know, it's not just getting buried alive. There's a guy who does this type of therapy where he buries you up to the neck and he leaves you overnight. So it's sort of like some type of therapeutic session. So, you know, we were interested in trying these things out. Were they legit? Do they work? What do we think of it? So, yeah, there were some other ideas there that we had.
Some of it really is quite out there. Now, the current series, Hello Stranger, we've touched on two of their subject matters, but you actually go home with one of these people that you've just met on the street. How do you broach that? And I mean, it's about exploring their answers further, but what do you sometimes find in that space?
Well, when you're meeting someone quickly on the street and getting to know them as quickly as you can, you're asking questions about who they are, where they're from, what are they up to that day. It doesn't take long before you get a bit of a sense of who they are, if they're a good character as well. Mm. If they're an interesting sort of character, you're like, okay, what's this guy up to? Or what's this lady up to? What's their story? And then we just, as quickly as we can, sort of get a sense. We go, oh, this person could be someone worth following up and exploring further. So we'll say to them, hey, do you mind if I give you a call a bit later? We're going to keep shooting, but I'd love to talk to you. This show is about following people home, about potentially... you know, doing a story on you. So then you do a second lot of research later on and get a sense of what could you do? What is this story? So that's sort of how it worked. So we actually only followed the 10 that we ended up using. We did quite a vetting process before we did it. We spoke to lots of people and then decided this is the one and we'll go with it. So we did a lot of those sorts of phone calls, and then we ultimately went, okay, that's the person. Let's chase them for a week.
For all of my radio students listening, that's called the pre-interview. It's a very important part of the interview.
That will be on the test.
Very important. It's really interesting, the pre-interview, because you want to be careful you don't ask too much sometimes.
Yeah.
You want to get a sense that they're good talkers and that they've got good things to say. But if you ask all the good stuff, sometimes when it comes around to doing the thing, the person who you've interviewed, especially if they don't do many interviews, feel like they've already told you it before.
Mm-hmm. It's more about getting a feel for them as a talent.
And, of course, you don't want to end up at somebody's house down a hole with somebody standing above you saying, put the lotion on the skin or you'll get the hose again.
Exactly. Oh, you find yourself in some weird spots, I tell you.
Now, you must get some pretty wacky people, though, in front of that camera. Is there a whole bloopers reel that we'll never get to see?
Yeah. Oh, look, if you're filming, what are we filming? Yeah, in that series, we filmed 400-plus people.
Wow.
Each of them for 15 minutes, say. So that's a lot of, what does that work out to be? That's, you know, 10 hours of content. That gets cut down to 10 five-minute pieces, so... it goes 10 hours to basically 1 hour. So there's a lot of stuff that hits the floor. But as a general rule, the best stuff stays in.
Mm.
It's a thing that I'd never heard the term until I first moved to Sydney and started working television, which is killing babies. And sometimes you've got a point where there's two good bits, and although they're both great in their own right, it's not working to have both in the piece, you know. So you have to cut bits. So yeah, there's definitely good bits that don't make it. Sometimes good whole sections that don't make it of good answers, because you just need to be brutal for time to keep that pace up.
And I imagine sometimes it doesn't go with the thread that you're on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. There's no way of joining together. What's one of the tricks about editor that he does? He's a brilliant editor. Is that he joins everything together. He grabs all these different answers that have no link. People from all across the country, all shapes and sizes, all looks. And that's one thing I suppose your listeners can't tell, is because this stuff's made for television and not necessarily for radio, is that we film it on a black background in the street. We set up a little black background and we just film people's faces. So you've got this beautiful mixture of colours, looks, ages, hairstyles, and they're just talking straight at the camera. So all that gets mixed in together and into this thread that sort of tells a wider story about this one topic.
And what you can't really tell in radio is those faces then become individual stories, just because you don't know their name, but you do recognise the face from before, and you then start to, in your head, piece together their story, and it becomes far more powerful. Now, Kirk, the series You Can't Ask That has become a huge success, and ABC has agreed to go into a second round. Tell us about the first series, because there was a couple of our friends here that were part of that, including Christian, who was on your Sex Worker edition. He's one of a former Joy presenter.
Fantastic.
But you've got a whole new series coming up. Let's talk about the first series. What did you find about that was challenging or different? Because it's, you take yourself right out of that equation.
Yeah, you don't hear me at all. The basic premise of this was to go, let's take a stereotype group of people and ask them all the things you wish you could ask but you're not normally allowed to ask. And so that was the basic idea. And who are these stereotype groups of people? Well, there's the real obvious ones in 2015, which was Muslims. The Lint attack had just happened. So Muslims were particularly stereotyped and stigmatized. But fat people, sex workers, ex-prisoners, short-statured people, people in wheelchairs. But then we sort of broadened it out to be misunderstood as well. So we took polyamory, for example, which most people don't know what it is, and asked questions about that. So that's how the show worked. And then we got the questions from the public. What would you want to know? If you could ask this person anything, if you could ask that person anything, what would you want to ask them? People sent in their questions. We chose, I suppose, the most reoccurring questions. So, again, to use the fat example, why are you so fat? Took the wording of people from the public. So often the questions had a bit of bite to them or a bit of judgment associated in the question. And then everyone in the groups got to pick the question up that was sitting in front of them, read it out, and answer the question. And what was lovely about that was that, again, to keep using the fat example, a lot of the guys we spoke to in the groups, these are questions we're hearing every single day, but they're rarely asked in a nice way. They're shouted by someone. It's laced with judgment. But in this instance, they got to pick the question out, read it, and respond however they wanted to respond, and actually answer that question on their own terms, which was quite nice.
There's an art to this, though, too, because it's about having the right faces that are going to connect to an audience. I mean, the audience have randomly asked these questions, but the faces you see in this setup, in this cohort of people that you want to stereotype, because that's where the judgment is, there's power in choosing who those people are.
Totally. If you're going to go, okay, let's take a group of Aboriginal people. Well, how can eight people that we interview on a show represent the entire Aboriginal people? They can't.
Mm.
So we never claim to say this is what all Aboriginal people think.
Mm.
What we want to show is here's eight different Aboriginals. They have different ages. They have different experiences. They have different parenting. They are from the city, they're from the country, they're from Arnhem Land, they're related to each other, they're not, they've never met. So let's take eight varying people, ask them all the same question. What happens is when you ask all these people the same question is they don't all have the same response. You start realizing that not everyone within your stereotype thinks the same. You know, surprise, surprise. They don't all agree on the same answers. They don't all think that Indigenous is the right word or that Aboriginal is the right word or whatever. And so by having all these different faces, and only eight, for example, they start disagreeing with each other and you start realizing, oh, that's right, okay, this stereotype is not true. Because, of course, people are going to have different opinions because they're all individuals. And this one thing that they happen to be linked to doesn't override everything else.
And this one thing that we happen to judge them by is actually ridiculous.
Yeah, of course.
We're speaking.
So that's sort of how we cast it. We want to get cast, I suppose, how we try and fill the interviews. We want to get a variety of experiences and stories so that we can hear a variety of answers.
We're speaking with Kirk Docker. He is the producer and genius behind things like Hungry Beast, You Can't Ask That, and Hello Strange. It's all right, take a look at it. We will find out how you can contribute to the next series of You Can't Ask That very shortly here on Hide and Seek. Just shake that ass.
On it, baby. Joy. Get on it.
Just shake what your mama gave you. Get on it.
Joy 94.9. Dean Beck and Benny B with you on your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. A big hello to Chappelle listening to Joy 94.9, which is odd considering she dissed Melbourne, but big love to you, my dear. We are speaking with Kirk Docker, who is the guy behind You Can't Ask That Series 2.
That's right. So if you're not familiar with You Can't Ask That, it is about breaking down stereotypes and offering genuine insight into the experiences of people who live with labels. The series asks groups of misunderstood, judged or marginalised Australians the awkward, inappropriate or uncomfortable question you've always wanted to know the answers to, but have been too afraid to ask. So Kirk, you're just going to series two, talking with groups, people with Down syndrome, ICE users, blind people, BDSM. Were you shocked by, was there a certain group that you did that you got some surprising answers?
Well, you're still in production, aren't you?
Yeah, we're shooting at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
God, there's always surprising answers.
Yep.
It's always surprising. Like blind people. We met a woman, well, I interviewed a woman, who is deaf and blind, completely deaf and completely blind. Like, I was just trying to get my head around, how does she even do anything? So her whole interview was incredible.
Yeah.
And she can speak perfectly because she lost her hearing 20 years ago. So she lived her whole life hearing, and then she had an infection in her ear, and she's now completely deaf. She can play the piano. I'm astounded by her. So,
wow.
You know, there's people time and time again where you are learning things. You go in thinking you know a certain amount of answers and you come out realizing that you knew absolutely nothing. So, yes, I'm always shocked by what it is. Shocked is one way to say it, but I just love hearing. I love how, what a privilege to have these sorts of conversations day in, day out.
You've got 14 or so episodes in series two. Are these...
12.
12, is it? Including
12, yeah.
Cosmetic surgery enthusiasts. I can't wait for that.
Oh, no, we actually... So what we did initially was that we couldn't work out what we wanted to do this year. So we sort of put a bit of a call out, a sort of larger call. And then
See, we did our research,
down,
Kirk.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, look, you guys are well ahead of the game here because they're still in production.
Mm-hmm.
So when we put those things out, we wanted to know from people what you want to know questions to, and then we sort of narrowed it down. And there were some things do we either go with people with facial disfigurements, or do we either go with cosmetic surgery addicts? Because they're sort of there's some similar territory in terms of questions. So then we decided one or the other. So that's sort of how we went. We wanted to make sure that it's important when you go across 12 episodes, you've got a variety of different sorts of people in there. Like I was saying in series one, the polyamory group was about curiosity. You want to know, how does this thing work? Do you have orgies all day long? They're all about questions about trying to understand, how does this thing work? Whereas you go to the Muslim group, and a lot of that were very accusatory sorts of questions. Treatment of women, you know, terrorism. So they each have their own energy, I suppose. So you need to make sure that across a series you've got different sorts of energies. You want groups that bring different sorts of, you know, answers and different sorts of energies themselves. So that's how we sort of ultimately end up choosing the 12.
Well, you have a free plug to put the call out to whomever you want to fill this category. I know you're coming to Melbourne very soon. And so who do you need? What do you want?
We're still interviewing for the BDSM category.
We can find you some of them, Kirk.
I'm sure we can help with that.
We need, you know, what we need at the moment is like a spunky young bloke.
Well, Ben knows heaps of them.
Oh, yeah.
We don't mind if they're a top or a bottom. We don't really mind what you're into. Like I said, we have a series of people we've already interviewed. So when we talk to people, we try and make sure that we've got a mix. But we haven't got a spunky young bloke. We haven't got anyone, we haven't got a gay bloke yet either. So we would love anyone who fits that category to...
What about a young...
Who'd like to talk about what I do.
A young pup.
A young pup could be fun.
Okay.
A young pup could be very fun.
We've got a few of those listening.
So, yeah, we're interested. We're interested in here. We have at the moment a mixture of tops and bottoms, of people into all sorts of kink. So we will, you know, like I said, we want to get a mixture of experiences, and we talk to people and just sort of work out, does that fit into our little matrix that we've sort of worked out? So at the moment, we're looking for someone young and spunky and happy to talk about, you know, what they get into.
Excellent. How do they get in contact with you?
Yeah.
Easiest just to email me. Do you want to, can I just say it straight out loud?
You can
ready, I suppose.
Just, give us your email, and I would include a picture with your email correspondence.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I thought you were saying I should include a picture.
No. Not too. You.
Yes, please. Yes, the audience, please, include a picture. That'd be great. No cock shops, please.
No. All right. But explain your kink and that you're keen to be a part of You Can't Ask That. And a picture of you, a picture in your gear and a picture just normal?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
All right.
That'd be awesome. And you'll be asked the same questions as everyone, so it's quite fun, actually. People get a bit nervous initially, like, what will these questions be? And then after one or two, they're like, oh, what's going to be next?
And
what else do people want to know?
And if you just go on YouTube, you can see the previous series and you get an idea of what's going on. It's nothing too in your face. In fact, it is a bit of fun. How do they get in contact with you?
Yeah, so pen's ready. Docker.kirk, so D-O-C-K-E-R.
Kirk at abc.net.au. There will be that will be on our podcast page for this particular episode as well.
I think we can help you out there, Kirk.
Docker.kirk at abc.net.au. And I've never taken the piss out of you for your docking surname, but consider that done.
Yeah.
Kirk, thank you so much.
See, the thing is with names, they originate with what you used to do.
Yeah, like, right.
Black, Ginger Black. So Docker, my family is the history of people into docking.
Thank you, Kirk. Lovely to talk to you, as always. And good luck with season two.
Thank you. See you in Melbourne.
Kirk Docker, you too. Producer of... season two of You Can't Ask That. Are you going to put your hand up for it, Benny?
I think I'll give it a go. Why not? Sounds like fun.
All right, cool. Don't forget to include a picture.
Sure.
This is Hide and Seek.
Do you have a business, product or service that needs to be seen and heard? Become a Joy sponsor and get the best of both worlds. Have your message heard on air by 329,000 monthly listeners. Have your message seen online at joy.org.au via the Joy sponsorship directory. Sponsorship starts from as low as $295. And best of all, those who sponsor us for more than 1 month are featured on our listing free. Yes, free! Call 1-300-JOY-949 or email sales@joy.org.au for more details. Joy 94.9, the diverse voice of the GLBTI community.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
Hey, Benny B, it's about time for us to rack off on out of here.
Sadly, it is, yes.
But before we go, we would...
What are you doing on Friday night?
We would like to remind you of the Blue Fuckraiser Party.
Mm-hmm.
It is to help raise money for Prep Access Now.
Exactly. A very great organisation. They need our funds.
It is on at the Dungeon at Club 80 this Friday night. You can find out more information by going to prepaccessnow.com.au. And good luck to all of those going. I hope you enjoy your evening.
Should be loads of fun.
Thank you very much, Benny, for joining me on Hide and Seek. Big thank you to Kirk Docker. Till next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Hide and Seek. Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choosewell. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.